live for a new episode of the Electric Podcast. I am Fred Lambert, your host. And as usual, I'm joined by the great Seth Wintrow. How are you doing this week, Seth?
I'm good.
All right. We're going to have a lot to talk about this week. We got some new information on the Tesla Semi, which seemed to actually, fairly confident that Tesla Semi is happening right now. So it's going to be the year of the Tesla Semi, which might greatly, most likely not greatly, accelerate trucking electrification in the U.S., which is lagging behind the rest of the world. We have some not so good news about the 4680, which is actually the diesel inside the Tesla Semi, though. We got, you know, just breeding a little bit of hope into the Roadster program again. We got Rivian CEO that hinted at something that Seth and I have been talking about on the podcast for, you know, better part of a year. So that was a nice little acknowledgement that you know, could be big for Rivian and for the truck market in the U.S. also. We're going to talk about the iX3 from BMW. Pricing has come out. People are liking it. Then the Lexus TZ that was unveiled, the Highlander version of the Lexus. We got a real-world test of the Chevy Bolt EV that was really encouraging. We got the Porsche Taycan taking back the Nürburgring record. We're going to talk about that. And BYD that is, just racking up orders for their new vehicles. But before we get into that, I want to just give a quick acknowledgement to today's episode sponsor. We have GM Energy sponsoring today's episode. If you want to experience more resilience and control over your home energy, the GM Energy home system has stationary battery power for always ready backup energy for your home. And the GM Energy power bank takes in energy from the grid and stores it for when you need it the most. You can learn more at gmenergy.gm.com. We have a link in the show notes, and we're going to talk a little bit more about them like halfway through the show. We are also sponsored by NeuroHUD. Check out the NeuroHUD Pro, featuring a true Tesla-focused HUD experience with navigation, blind spot alerts, autopilot status, and freely switchable display modes, now on Kickstarter or TrenterVision.com. We have also the link in the show notes, and we're going to talk a little bit more about them later on the show. But first, let's talk about the 4680. There's a situation right now around the 4680 cells from Tesla that is frustrating a lot of buyers. It's 4680 cells, that's what we call them. Like, there's a bunch. They're not all equal, obviously. 4680 is the format of the cell, but there's different chemistries available. Now there's different companies manufacturing them. It's not just Tesla. But originally, they were announced at the original battery day in 2020, and it was supposed to be the next-gen batteries that's going to enable a bunch of new performance in Tesla vehicles, lower costs. You know, that's when Tesla announced the $25,000 Tesla that the 4680 is going to enable, and higher energy density, and faster charging, like basically like everything that you want from a battery cell. And it hasn't really played out the way that Tesla originally announced. And, the history of it, like there was a dry electrode manufacturing process that didn't really work out. Now it's actually back on the table, apparently. And they ran into a lot of bottlenecks that reduce not only the production capacity, but also just the viability of the cells themselves, limiting them to, 2023, some made it into the Model Y, early Model Ys, and people were not impressed by the performance of that particular Model Y back then, produced at Gigafactory Texas. It was just not the best pack at all. And then they stopped producing in the Model Y with 4680 cell and only used it in the Cybertruck. And the Cybertruck had, higher charging capacity, but even then it was not the best charging capacity. And it was also enabled by the 800 volt system rather than the cell themselves. And obviously Cybertruck was a commercial failure by any standard. And part of that can be attributed to the 4680 cells because it was much more expensive than originally announced. And like I said, the charging curve wasn't as good and the range was much lower than, depending on how you look at it. But, this also changed the trims and everything. But there was supposed to be a 500-mile Cybertruck. Didn't happen. And then there was supposed to be like a $60,000 Cybertruck at 500 miles. Also didn't happen. So part of that blame go to the 4680 cell. Now, a few months ago, Tesla announced that we are actually bringing back the 4680 cell, Tesla-made cell, into the Model Y, some Model Y. They did not elaborate on which one. And that's part of the issue here. Like, people are not sure what cell they are getting and what trim of the Model Y, because everything points to you not really wanting that cell in your Model Y. And so some of them are produced, well, all the cells are produced in Gigafactory Austin, but they are selling some of them in the trim, premium trim in the US. And then now in they are in exporting them to Germany and making using them in a Model Y configuration there. The Model Y with the rear-wheel drive long range, I think, is the... I got a bit confused here. Where did I put that in the article? I just put Model Y. Yeah, premium long range rear-wheel drive. All right. So that there was a you know right away that it is those cells based on the range. The range dropped from 661 kilometers to 609 kilometers. Okay, so now that's not ideal. You know, you get a range reduction of 52 kilometers, but at least you know that. The thing that people don't really know is the charge curve on this is worse. So now you get a total capacity of 79 kilowatt hour out of that battery pack, 74 usable. So it's a little bit down from the previous 82 to 84 kilowatt hour version. So you see here that technically it's not initially that it's less efficient. So either heavier or not as energy dense is that Tesla put less cell capacity into the vehicle. But so that's where you get your range difference. But that might be a cost issue. Tesla did that for cost. And the charging curve is the worst part. So the charging curve, out of spec did a video on testing it, and they ran a 15-minute charging test from 10% state of charge and only added 39%, so 10 to 49% in that window. So it's 27 kilowatt hour added, and in the same window, you would have 29 kilowatt hour added on the previous version of the Model Y with the that was the LG batteries, which, by the way, the LG battery pack is also, it was like the second worst. So people were not happy with the LG battery pack either. We did a report on that earlier this year where they are having a lot of issues with them that are they're breaking down, basically. So even compared to the worst battery pack Tesla has ever had, the 4680 in the new Model Y in Europe is even worse in terms of charging performance. I mean, out of spec, which I see as like pretty much like a Tesla friendly publication, is said not to buy the car. Like, they cannot recommend that version of the vehicle. It's pretty rough.
So obviously we went from, you know, like AA size batteries to bigger batteries, laptop kind of batteries, to the two series batteries, now the four batteries. You'd think as they get bigger, they would get better, faster charging, better capacity, all this stuff. What's going on?
Do we know what's going on? I'm going to go back to the CATL CEO's comments. It's like, I don't think Tesla knows how to make batteries. And it is harsh to say, because obviously Tesla has not been making batteries for long. And I mean, we're talking about like 6 years at this point. I mean, there was some efforts before the announcement. Like, they've been working on it for a little bit longer than that. They've been working on battery chemistry for, you know, two decades at this point. So Tesla is not completely new to batteries, but making batteries at scale is extremely difficult. And the only thing we can say for sure right now is Tesla is obviously way behind in the making of producing their own battery cells. That's clear as day. And that there's some backlash. Like, I'm showing a tweet right now here from an EV reporter from France. So a lot of people are canceling their orders, because the thing is, like, Tesla, they didn't really also let people know that, by the way, we're switching the premium rear-wheel drive from the LG pack to our own cells. Like, it's not they don't announce that. So they just you get like a little email, a little update in your app that say, hey, by the way, now you're down to 603 kilometers. It was originally 603 and then they bump it up to 609, but still. So there's a lot of frustration around that, and then people So that Tesla has to disclose, but then after the fact, you get the car and you realize also the charging curve is like a lot worse. The charging curve. So that's like the situation right now, how it is. But I think the biggest story here around the 4680 is like, I think the 4680 and Tesla's effort to make its own battery cells, while, you know, commendable, especially when it was done at a time where Tesla, you know, thought it was going to keep growing their deliveries at 50% a year. And then they thought like, we're going to need, you know, to make our own battery cells, otherwise our suppliers won't be able to keep up with our demand. That turned out to be completely like a miscalculation from Tesla's part, or a change of direction. You know, I think some of Tesla's demand problems are related to their own decisions. But right. I think the 4680 in itself set is kind of part of the reason why Tesla is kind of falling behind in EVs, where much like the decision to go with autonomy and then having design decision within your vehicle programs related to thinking that, you know, autonomy is just around the corner, I think Tesla has made decision around their battery programs thinking that, hey, we have those 4680 cells coming. So is it worth, you know, validating and integrating the latest and best technology from CATL, from BYD, and everything like that right now in a new vehicle program, or just keep the existing cells that we have that is getting cheaper because it's the previous generation. It's already all integrated into a vehicle, so we don't have to do new validation and everything, and just wait until we get our own 4680. And what has resulted in that is like we've seen Tesla's lead in efficiency have been reduced to basically nothing, especially compared to, you know, more premium automakers. And then we've seen the charging lead from Tesla. I mean, on the vehicle side, obviously supercharger is still, you know, top of the line, but except on total output capacity, obviously. But the charging curve of Tesla's vehicles are, you know, terrible compared to, you know, the latest and best technology out there. So I think that is part of it. You know, I don't know if that makes sense what I just said.
Yeah, I mean, on a high level, you know, Tesla kind of built its company on building, like when it built the Model S, they kind of had to build everything from scratch, right? They did mm-hmm. all that stuff in-house. And when they built the Model 3 and the Model Y, they did a lot of their own battery, you know, pack manufacturing. So they kind of had come from a mindset where, you know, this thing doesn't exist yet, so we have to build it. And that worked for them for a while because they, mm-hmm. you know, they really had to do that. And there was, and, you know, GM and whatever, they had, you know, other, they were like, LG, save us, whatever. Mm-hmm. So, you know, fast forward to today, you have the CATLs of the world and, you know, BYD and everybody else building like large scale batteries and doing it well. And all the other companies are just outsourcing to these. Mm-hmm. And where Tesla is still trying to build its own. Obviously, Tesla is outsourcing as well. But, you know, I don't think they're a leader in the battery manufacturing business. No.
By no metric,
yeah.
Yeah, basically what you're saying is like vertical, Tesla turned to vertical integration by necessity, yeah. But took it a little bit too far now, and, you know, now is stuck with subpar component that where they, you know, if it makes sense, if you say like this part just doesn't exist, so I'm going to make it myself instead of going to a supplier. Right. But if something out there already exists, is better. Maybe it makes sense for you to do it yourself. Maybe you have the expertise, the capacity, everything. But in terms of battery cell, I think we now have the evidence that it's just not the case for Tesla. That's a good segue to the Tesla Semi, because the Tesla Semi is actually one of the few vehicle programs that use the 4680 battery cells from Tesla. And maybe that's where they're going to shine. Now we have the actual pack capacity thanks to a California Air Resource Board regulatory filing that was released this week. So we know that the long-range 5mAh version has a 822 kilowatt-hour pack, while the shorter range, standard range version at 325 miles of range has a 548 kilowatt-hour pack. So a pretty massive difference in range too. And I made this little GIF here where you can see the difference between the two. So, you know, a pretty significant size difference. So as you can see, Tesla basically had another, you know, in parallel system of battery modules that sits in the back of the longer wheelbase. But a vastly different vehicle here. And I posted this week, I did a little total cost of ownership comparison between the Tesla Semi, the 500 mile version, and the and comparable diesel truck to try to figure out really, like, can this, you know, beat diesel at, you know, the cost of operation, which is the main thing that they look at, fleet operators and truck owners. And at a 1.7 kilowatt hour per mile consumption, and depending on the electricity, so the electricity rates is really the difference maker. We talked about it last week when Tesla released their mega charger prices. And if you buy a mega charger, Tesla charge you at 8 cents per kilowatt hour of a network fee on before anything else. So before your actual electricity cost and everything, which the fee itself is higher than Tesla said they were going to sell electricity had to Tesla Semi owners back in 2017. So this has changed quite a bit. But what else has changed, especially in the last few months, is diesel prices are through the roof, like absolutely ridiculous prices. I think they went up 40% since the beginning of the year. It's absolutely nuts. And, you know, we don't know what's going to happen with this war in the Middle East right now in Iran. Every day there's appears to be a resolution, and then by the end of the day it's like, oh, actually it's not a resolution, we just bombed them again, and so on and so on. So it's you're at the mercy of the geopolitical situation when it comes to diesel. So I actually build a little, did I link to it here? Yeah, total cost of ownership here. You have, you know, the whole study is in the article, but also build this little HTML, you know, slider thing here where you can actually slide the cost of electricity and the cost of diesel. So right now, the cost of diesel, I think this is the average, 5.35 per gallons in the U.S. You know, realistically speaking, it should, you know, settle down a little bit. Let's say we bring it back to 450. At 450, the Tesla Semi efficiency, 100,000 miles annually, which I think is the average for Class 8 trucks, 8 miles per gallon, which is what you get from a brand new truck, so they're more efficient. Then I put the price of $165,000, which is, you know, actually on the lower side, let's say. So it's trying to advantage diesel here to make it look as good as possible to diesel, to show you how you can still beat, you know, almost a best case scenario. I mean, let's say best case scenario, the diesel price would be maybe like $4, let's say. Now, at this point, is like how much you pay for your electricity to charge the Tesla Semi, that changes everything else. So you see at 14 cents per gallon, we have Dean here that says a diesel price on around $7.50 a gallon in California. And California, that's right, California. But California, the price of the electricity that you're going to charge it to is going to be way higher than this 14 cents. So it doesn't even out, but pretty much. So at 14 cents per kilowatt hour here, you save $64,000. That's on 5 years. After 5 years, $114,000 after 7 years, and over 10 years, which, you know, assumes like the lifetime of the truck, $208,000. And this is, by the way, accounting for, so you buy the Tesla Semi for $290,000, and then also a $60,000 cost of installing a base charger. So you have a home base where you have your charger. And obviously this affects electricity rates, because this is probably what you're going to pay at home using the base charger. But then if you go public charging, you know, the price is going to be much higher. And you can see here on live how it changes. So as soon as you get to 20 cents, like now I'm at 22 cents for the first 5 years, you actually lose $1,000 difference, but you gain it back in the 7 and 10 year time frame, up to $72,000 in saving. But then if you keep going up, now both the 5 years and 7 years is in the red at 24 cents, and then if you go higher than that, like 30 cents, everything is in the red. So there's a really high importance of controlling your electricity cost. That's the main thing. But it's feasible. Like, there is definitely scenarios where, and also this is before incentives. So for example, California, you have $7.50 a gallon per diesel, and you have let's do it for fun. Let's look, you have also incentive on the side. So let's say you're gonna pay you're gonna pay quite a bit in electricity, like it can go easily on average, let's say 35 with a mix of charging on the road and charging at home. You know, this, you know, you lose $120,000 by year five compared to diesel, but now you put it at $7.50 a gallon. I doubt it's going to stay there for a long time, but still.
It almost goes off the slider.
Yeah, I didn't account for more than $8, I think, a gallon in the slider. So that now you save $95,000 the first year, $265,000. So basically the price of the truck over 10 years. And this is before any incentive. So in California, you have also electric trucking incentive, which basically, you know, cut the entire, I think you're going to make money the first year at this point.
Yeah. So the difference in diesel that you pay over electricity is more than the price of the truck. So you get basically a free truck.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So I encourage you to look like your local like electricity rates here. You put them there, and then maybe add, you know, 50% if depending on how much you think you would charge at a mega charger, at a public charger, and then look at your local diesel price, which of course is going to fluctuate. But you can get a pretty good idea of just how, you know, financially viable a Tesla Semi would be. Was there anything else in there in the filing? I don't think so. Nothing too crazy in the Tesla Semi filing. All right, last Tesla news I want to discuss before we move on, and then we're gonna have a little word from our sponsors that we want to talk to you about, guys. Which I think it, you know, it's value added ad, like it's things that I think you're gonna find interesting. And then after that, we're gonna discuss some non-Tesla news and then go to you guys' comments. So if you guys have questions for us, you can put them in the comments right now and get to it at the before the end of the show. We got some tiny little bit of hope still for the Roadster by the end of the month or maybe early June. That is the latest word for Elon, but you know, take it with the biggest grain of salt you can find, because obviously he said that this thing's gonna happen every year for the last 6-7 years at this point. And this thing was unveiled almost a decade ago now.
Same time.
What happened? Say that again?
Same time as the Semi.
Yep, yeah, exactly. But the Semi is now entering into production. So it kind of makes sense that the Roadster was supposed to be a year behind. Originally, that was the plan. That was 2000. So the unveiling was 2017. The Tesla Semi was supposed to enter production in 2019. The Roadster in 2020. Honestly, we're now in 2026 and the Tesla Semi is entering production. So what happened this week with the Roadster is that there was two new trademark filings. So there was another one a few months ago in February that we showed you, that was the kind of a silhouette of the vehicle that was updated. Now it's the wordmark. So this is the new Roadster wordmark. Kind of have a little Blade Runner feel to it, like of the typo. And the second one is this badge. So it looks like the Roadster is going to have its own badge, which would be a first for Tesla. Well, unless you count like the Plaid Model S and X, but they still have the Model S and X, and it's kind of a hatted badge. The Roadster, and then you have the Tesla badge, obviously. But the Roadster is almost like this size, this format of badge could almost replace the Tesla badge. Do you see that happening? Like,
It's hard to say.
Like, I mean, instead of this year,
might have both. Also, it's not like Cybertruck either. Like, I noticed, it doesn't feel like, you know, they're going with the spray paint on the wall kind of graffiti stuff. This is a different kind of vibe.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sleek, you know, ultra hypercar, so it's also it's going to be much more expensive, I think. So you want something a little bit more classy, maybe. But yeah, now the latest timeline for the Tesla Roadster is an unveiling. End of May or early June. Elon said that the demonstration is going to be the craziest thing you ever seen. And I think it might be happening, to be honest with you. Like, I think when the, you know, FSD aside, like, you know, the 2 weeks thing, but normally when Elon's timeline for an unveiling or something keeps getting closer and closer and closer, at least you have an idea that they're working on it and everything. It's just like something is not going great, probably. In the, you know, they probably tested the demonstration, didn't go super great. And also, I would note that, you know, this is a demonstration of an updated version of the new Roadster, which was unveiled almost a decade ago. So I think that, you know, we're going to see the new vehicle, and then bringing that to production is, you know, it likely going to take another year minimum, if, and that's a big if. All right, let's talk a little bit about GM Energy, our sponsor for this week's episode.
All right. Today's episode is sponsored by GM Energy. Smart energy features are no longer just a luxury. They're a necessity. One in four homes experiences power outages each year, from grid shutoffs to extreme weather. Many homeowners are looking for new ways to stay powered and connected. Fortunately, home energy systems can be offer resilience, style, sustainability benefits, all in one package. A power outage doesn't have to put your life on pause. GM EV owners can now use the GM Energy Home System to beat the blackout. This advanced system allows vehicle-to-home capable Chevrolet, Cadillac, or GMC EVs to store energy and, when needed, supply electricity back to the home, keeping the essentials running and your sanity in check during an outage. If you really want to experience more resilience and control over your home energy, the GM Energy Home System adds stationary battery power for always-ready backup energy for your home. The GM Energy Power Bank takes in energy from the grid and stores it for when you need it most. Learn more at gmenergy.gm.com. A huge thank you to GM Energy for sponsoring the show.
Yes, thank you very much. And then we also sponsored for today's episode by NeuroHUD.
All right. This week's episode is also sponsored by NeuroHUD, the world's first true heads-up display built specifically for Tesla drivers. You can currently get the NeuroHUD Pro for a special limited time price by hitting the link in the show notes or visiting TrantorVision.com. NeuroHUD brings key Tesla driving information directly to your line of sight, including Tesla navigation, blind spot alerts, autopilot status, and more, helping you keep your eyes on the road where they belong. What makes it especially unique is the installation process. NeuroHUD is completely non-invasive, with no trim removal, no factory wiring modifications, and it's 100% warranty safe. It works through Tesla's API integration and direct visual reading of the center screen. The NeuroHUD Pro also gives drivers the freedom to switch between windshield projection mode and combiner display mode, depending on driving preference or visibility conditions. It's also been shaped directly by the Tesla community, with over a year and a half of development feedback from thousands of Tesla owners, and it's already surpassed 400,000 in Kickstarter funding within the first 72 hours. Check out more details on Kickstarter or at TrantorVision.com. Thanks again to NeuroHUD for sponsoring.
Yes, thank you, NeuroHUD and TrantorVision. Let me go back to this one here. All right. We have one, two, three, four, six other news items to discuss before we jump into the comment section. So if you guys have a question for us or any comments about any of the stories that we discussed today or any other story in the EV world that you want Seth or I take on, you can put them in the comment section below. We're live. We're already getting comments from YouTube, Facebook, X. We have Paul Mueller on X. I said the badge, the Roadster badge looks like the Punisher. So you're right. The little three little line at the bottom is kind of Punisher-like. All right, so Seth and I have been talking about, like, yeah, the R2 is amazing. R2 is, you know, in the midsize SUV segment, you know, one of the most popular segment ever. And it's probably going to do quite well. We've seen the pricing being released lately with the full spec. You know, it's top of the line stuff. But, you know, Rivian, when it was first unveiled, the big thing that it was, I mean, it was like 2019, I want to say, that they unveiled the first prototypes and everything, and they announced the R1s. The big thing was like, it's an electric pickup truck, and there was like no electric pickup truck available at the time. It was a big deal, and a lot of people still, when they think Rivian, they still think pickup. And the R2 platform would be an ideal platform to make a you know, mid-size pickup variant. And we've been pushing that for a little bit now. And it's nice to see RJ Scaringe, the CEO of Rivian, sort of hinting at it. So what did he say exactly? I want to use his word. So he was asked directly about, they were talking about variants of the R2. But at first it sounded more like they were talking about trims, like different like the R2 rear-wheel drive versus the R2 all-wheel drive, etc. But then when asked specifically about a pickup variant of the R2, Scaringe didn't deny it. Instead, he told Reuters that they are building the upcoming Georgia plans to, and I quote, allow for different variation without disclosing the specific details of those variation. So he acknowledged that it could also be like a R2X, just so thinking of like the R2 3X, which is the R3X, sorry, which is the hatchback three motor, you know, hatch that they unveil at the same time that they unveil the R2. So it could be that too, but you know, he said that he was careful not to announce a new vehicle program or anything, but it basically didn't deny that, yes, the R2 could support another pickup variant, and that is something that could be built at the Georgia plant that is under construction now. So this is exciting.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of, the pickup kind of makes a lot of sense. Unfortunately, or, you know, fortunately for consumers, like there are some new options coming out, like Slate, Ford is talking about it. I think that some of the Chinese makers are also talking mm-hmm. about smaller pickups. So good for consumers. Might be a little late for Rivian to jump on that.
I don't know. I think it would probably, right as of now, I think it would sit in its own kind of market. I think Slate is down market from that. Yeah. You know, Slate is kind of, you know, I think it's a really cool idea and everything, but it's kind of out there, like, you know, even no infotainment system, you have your phone. I mean, I think basically just has AC and that's it. Like, it's a completely different vehicle. And then you have the, you know, next gen Ford. I don't know how much people are, you know, counting on Ford to actually deliver with what they've been doing with their EV programs in the last few years, but it does sound like it's still the plan to bring the next gen cheaper pickup. But even then, it's supposed to be like a $30,000 pickup, which would be very cool, but like it would probably be closer to the Slate than it would be from an R2 pickup, in my opinion. Because an R2 pickup would probably still be like $50,000 to $60,000, I think, like in that range. Maybe start at 50 and goes to like 60, 65, which there's nothing in that range right now at 50, starting at $50,000. And I think it would still be like a, you know, a premium vehicle like Rivian is known for. Speaking of premium vehicle, the iX3 is a lot of people are eyeing this right now. It's a very interesting entry from BMW. The 2027 iX3 pre-orders are open now, and we have the price and final range. And it's interesting. It's not cheap, but for what you get, it's really not bad. So the 2027 iX3 50 xDrive starts at $61,500. And I think 61 is with the delivery fee, I think, too. Because I remember seeing 60, so I would assume that includes the delivery fee. That's the sport trim standard with 20-inch Aero bicolor wheels, multifunction steering wheel, and driving assistance plus. So that's the option that you get. So obviously, BMW also has a lot of other, you know, you can configure this thing easily over $75,000 if you want to by just packing it up. But at that price, I just want to make sure the range here. Yeah, so the base version with the 20-inch wheel on summer tires is the one that gets you 435 miles of range. And that's EPA, I think, right? That was the US release. Yeah, I think that was the US release. So 435 miles of range on the EPA. It's you know, quite a bit of range at that. You know, you would have to go with a Lucid Air normally to get that kind of range, and that's you know, $10,000, $15,000 more. And then, you know, you don't have a big SUV, because this is still a, you know, full-size SUV here. And a nice one too. I think the visually speaking, like the upgrade is the smaller beaver teeth instead of the big beaver teeth. Big upgrade. The three quarter back too. We don't have a picture of it here. It's like really nice. The profile is really nice. I think this is also something kind of a market of its own in the premium segment. Like, I don't think this is going to be like a Z-Rec, like Model Y competitor. Even the R2, I think it's probably more of an R2 competitor, but even then, it still start like $10,000 more than the R2, basically. Like, yeah. Well, technically, the R2 is going to start at $45,000 by the end of 2027, but for now, it's still like $10,000 more than the R2. So it's not exactly the same segment, but still pretty close.
Yeah, and I always think that Rivian really like is so much more off, you know, off-road focused than Tesla or BMW or anybody else.
It's, yeah, so not necessarily someone would be thinking of like, do I get R2 or do I get the iX3 because of that. But I think if you are in the market for an iX3, like you might think, maybe I can look at the right. R2. It's a little bit cheaper, and I get more, you know, off-road performance. Maybe not as comfortable on the road.
Right.
But you know, Jeremy Clarkson with
similar budget.
Yeah, just a $5,000 difference is huge. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Jeremy Clarkson would probably tell you to get the iX3 because, you know, he had an aversion for the anything that's off-road because they see. And he does have a point. Like, most people that have an off-road vehicle, if it's your main vehicle, probably not going off-roading, you know, nowhere near the majority of the time. So technically, you want to optimize for, you know, on-road comfort, but still. This thing's going to be optimized for off-road comfort, for on-road comfort, sorry. The Lexus TZ. So it's basically, if I understand correctly, it's the Highlander version for Lexus. So we already discussed the Highlander quite a bit. We're pretty impressed. I think they hit a lot of they check a lot of boxes with the Highlander. And obviously the Lexus TZ checks all the same boxes with, you know, a little bit more luxury. It also comes with a 77 or 96 kilowatt hour battery pack. You're also going to get, you know, up to 300 miles of range. You're going to get a towing capacity of 3,500 pounds. So not crazy, but still usable. Get a little bit more refined interior, a bit more button heavy. And obviously you have the two-row right now, but it's a three-row SUV. The second row seat looks like really nice captain seats. I like them. Here you see the back with the third row down. And pricing, I think the pricing is the only thing that they have not released so far. Yeah, charging speed of 150 kilowatts, probably one of the main thing that the boxes that they didn't check for like a 2026, 2027 vehicle is just a little bit behind.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of weird.
And no frunk too.
And NACS adapters.
Yeah. No frunk set. Are you disappointed by that?
Yeah. I got a Mercedes EQS and doesn't have a frunk. And, you know, it's funny because, like, Ford will say, like, you know, their Mustang Mach-E customers don't like the frunk. But it's a, you know, it's a big, heavy thing to lift up. And it's, you know, you can only open it from inside. Whereas, like, a Rivian or a Tesla owner will be like, yeah, the frunk's awesome. Like, I use it all the time. Because it's very easy to open. You can open it from the app. You can, you know, whatever. So it's not just building a frunk. It's making it easy to get to. And, you know, making the hood light. And so if you're not going to do a frunk, it's better to not do a frunk than do a bad frunk. Because nobody's going to use a bad frunk. Mm-hmm. If you're not going to do it, don't do it.
And I guess I would like to look underneath that cover to see what's going on. Like, you would get a better idea of like why they could not do one, but yeah. I do agree with you, like if you do one that like basically can fit a laptop, it's like what's the point? But I mean, in a three row SUV, because personally I don't use my frunk. I only use my frunk if I absolutely need it. So everything else is full, I use it. But for if you have a third row SUV though, you have a much smaller trunk. Yeah. And it gets like if your car is full of people and you still need to carry some things, you know, the trunk gets filled right pretty quickly. Then the frunk become automatically super more useful. So it's something to think about if you're looking at three row SUVs, because there are some that do have frunk. All right, Chevy Bolt EV, the new version, just got a range test from our friends at Edmunds. And good news, it beat the EPA. Some caveats though, but so the official range is 262 on this, up to 262 miles of range on a 65 kilowatt hour LFP battery. it's not I don't think it's a lot more than what the original Bolt was getting, but this is the EUV version too, so it's a little bit bigger version.
Yeah, it's 3 miles more than the 259 that was in the 2023.
Yeah, so on paper it is 3 miles more, but Edsman did their test and they got 290 miles on range on their real test scenario, which they claim is more representative of the average driving experience. But it's so it's 60% city, 40% highway, average of 40 miles per hour, which is what, like 65 kilometers an hour. So I don't know. Because it was 60 city, 40% highway. So that means that 60% of the mileage was city. So that makes sense for the average speed, being dragged down by the city driving versus highway driving. But technically, if you're looking at distance, normally I do a lot more distance highway versus city. Like I drive a bunch in the city, but if you look at the distance that I've driven in the city, it's nothing compared to the distance I drive on the highway. So I don't know how representative their test really is, but it's good that they beat it in a real world test. So I take that still as a win for GM, for Chevy, but I would, your mileage may vary. Let's just say it like that.
Literally.
Yeah. All right. Porsche is back at the top of the leaderboard on the Nürburgring EV record, production EV record, and another thing that needs some caveats here. Is what counts as a production EV. Sorry, my throat. But they have their latest version of the Porsche Taycan Turbo GT, which is equipped with a new Mante kit. And with that new Mante kit, which they claim is factory installed, so you can buy it and it's installed at the factory, making it a production car. Officially, from the Nürburgring record, though, it's classified as an electric executive core category. And the record is now 655.55. If I remember correctly, it's like a good, like 3 seconds better than the BYD record, which also was like stretching it. I think they're planning to make, so it's the Wanyang U9 and it's, the U9 is definitely a production car, but it was a track version of the U9 called the U9 Extreme, which they plan to make 30 units on. So again, production car by name. Yeah, 659 was the U9 back in August. So the record didn't last a year. And this is fun. Like this is like the record, for a while it was between Tesla and Porsche. It was going back and forth in the early 2020s. And then Tesla lost it in 2023. It hasn't really, competed for it since because they haven't released anything new really since 2023 in terms of the, of its top performance cars. Then it was BYD taking it. Then there was also the Xiaomi with the SU7 Ultra that competed for it. And now it's the Porsche Taycan with this new kit. So if you compare it, like the Xiaomi SU7 Ultra, but it was a stripped down version, so they remove a lot of the interior, got 646. So just a little bit faster, about 10 seconds faster almost. It's significant, but you cannot claim it because it was stripped down. So maybe we see the Xiaomi coming back with the SU7 Ultra and trying for it again.
Yeah, and they all use different drivers, but I think these drivers are pretty optimized. They're like right at the tip of their game.
Yeah, they make a difference for sure. It's not all car, but they get so used to it for a while that it makes a difference. I think that the driver for the Porsche Taycan this time was also the same driver that got a record when they were competing against Tesla.
Did we meet that guy in Germany one time? Weren't we driving in a car with him?
Oh, I might be, but the Porsche though, I don't know if.
Maybe
last time I went to with Porsche, maybe that was just you. You're generally the one that does the Porsche test drives. BYD has been, there's a lot of headlines about BYD sales going down and everything, but BYD is kind of like Tesla in early last year, where they are updating a lot of their vehicle programs right now, and they are releasing the new Blade cells. So their sales are going down quite a bit, but they are ramping up for a huge second half of the year, and they're showing up with a lot of pre-orders locked in. So this is their new SUV that was unveiled, you know, just a few weeks ago at the Beijing Auto Show. And, you know, it has the latest blade technology with a 5-minute fast charging up to 1,000 kilometers of range, 590 miles. And it starts at just 250,000 yen, which is about $37,000, goes up, you know, $10,000 more. And they announced that they have already over 100,000 reservation for it. It's it's basically a kind of a Toyota Highland competitor, I would say. So yeah. You see here the interior.
Yeah, that's a little bit different than a Toyota Highland, though.
Almost the Lexus version, I'd say. So you basically have the Lexus version for half the price here. Well, I don't know. That's not fair. I think we don't have the price of the Lexus just yet, but you know, it's probably going to be around $10,000 more than the Highland. So it should sit like in the 60s, and this starts in the 30s, and you know, fully equipped like that and everything, it's in the 40s. So yeah, probably $20,000 less than the Lexus. So yeah. There are no jokes. I get why they're nervous. The Jim Farley's of the world when they talk about it. And I think Jim Farley is probably the most honest one. And he said something like, if they come in, it's over.
Yeah, it's done. Just like close it all down. Detroit gone. All right. To the comments we go. Why is Tesla not prioritizing FSD on the Semi? Seems a bit odd since they've got the entirety of the passenger car business on autonomy. It is a good question.
Yeah, we've talked about that before. I think it's strategic. Like at first, they even said like, they didn't say anything about it. And then when they unveiled the production, like the first production version in 2022, which was just for the low volume hand built vehicles, they talked a little bit more about it and focused more on the driver assistance system, the safety and all that. So it's becoming quite clear. And also we see it on the prototype. All the hardware is there. So they're ready for it. I think they don't want to talk about full autonomy because I think it would potentially scare buyers. I mean, I don't think it would scare necessarily like fleet operators and all that, but owners operator for sure. They don't want to get the trucking industry, you know, to think negatively of them as like, this is a product that you buy to replace yourself. So it's more of a strategic approach not to talk about it. But if they solve it for the cars, I'm sure they would apply it to the trucks pretty quickly. And they share the same hardware anyway.
All right. Dean McManus, diesel prices are around $7.50 a gallon now in California. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's nuts. Like
we talk about $10 a gallon, it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think it happened before, right? I think there was one of the crises that has like
inflation, like in Malibu or something.
Yeah,
touched. All right, Carl in San Diego, because FSD is a toy for techies to play with. It's a liability for any company to use it with an employee.
Right. As of right now, it's kind of true. I don't think they would actually use it for commercial trucking right now, but there's features of it can be used for assisted driving. But in the future, you know, who knows, potential.
Paul Muller says the Roadster badge looks like the Punisher's.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Question. Do you think Elon or Drew set such crazy expectations for the 4680? Why did they not develop LFP instead?
There is, like I said earlier in the show, there's different chemistry of the 4680, including LFP. So they can make sales, LFP cells with the 4680. Eve, for example, made also 4680 cells with LFP. There's plenty of companies that do that now, including Tesla. I don't think the chemistry itself is the problem. I think it's the way Tesla manufactured the cells that is just not optimal right now. Like I said, they are quite new to making cells, especially cells in volume. So they're not on par with top of the line manufacturers right now.
All right, midsize R2 pickup would be a hit. I think we talked about that. Would it be? Do you think it would be better for Rivian to launch an R2T or R2S? Do you think they would have been better off?
Well, but the R2 is the R2S, is it? Like,
Yeah, the R2 is the R2S.
Yeah, so I don't know. I think they're kind of moving away from. I don't know what they're doing with that. Maybe once they launch an R2T, call the R2 the R2S, something like that. I definitely think the R2S is the move in terms of volume. You know, getting out the volume and everything. I think the biggest question is more. The bigger question would be like, should they do the R2T before they do the R3 or R3S?
Yeah.
The way I see it, probably yes, because if you learn from Tesla, and you should, because you know they were trailblazer in EVs, profitable EVs, high volume, and expanding as a new brand globally, there was extreme growing pain for Tesla once they went from North America to Europe with the Model 3 in volume, almost went bankrupt. It takes a lot of cash to expand to new market and expand in volume doing so. I think Rivian is already well established in North America, still growing in North America. And I know that they are hiring, global markets. I think that the R3 is going to be good for that, smaller vehicle, better for European market, better for Asian markets. And I think that if they do the R2T, whatever it's going to be called, first, and maximize the North American market while they plan and start, investing into the rollout in Europe, starting with the R3 and then the R2 behind it, and the R1s also potentially, just maybe much lower volume. I think that would be the best strategy, in my opinion.
Yeah. All right, Speculator question. What is the minivan-like vehicle Elon mentioned? Is it just the Model Y L?
Yeah, we didn't get a great response. That was, I think, almost directly asked during the last earnings call, and we didn't get a clear response from him. Right now, I think the speculation, it's either he was talking about either RoboVan or the Model Y L. If he was talking about the RoboVan, is just... it's stupid to think of it as a van and to think of it as, an actual like minivan, which people would think about, a consumer product that you can buy. But I wouldn't get it past Elon to think like that. While the Model Y L can also make sense when you say like, oh, it's even better than a minivan. Like that, I think Elon probably would say that also. And it's closer to reality in terms that you get a 3-row vehicle. It's not a minivan at all, though. But again, it's not a minivan. They said something better than a minivan. So yeah, I think the two top contenders are RoboVan and Model Y L.
Yep.
And the Model Y L is coming. A few weeks ago, it was spotted with manufacturer plates in the U.S. So it should be coming in early second half of this year, I would think.
All right. He follows with the question: who do I have to yell at to get a NACS bidirectional standard finalized and released?
There is one.
Yeah, I was going to say, doesn't NACS use the CCS
standard? Yeah.
Just a different plug.
Yeah. The standard exists. Not every automaker has officially adopted it, and therefore they're not officially authorized the use of the battery capacity in their vehicle with specific bidirectional chargers. So there's a few bidirectional chargers now that you can buy, directly from the automakers, like Tesla, like GM, a few others. But there is, a growing market now of third-party system. We talked about the Synergy one before. That's really interesting. There's the Decibel one also built right here in Montreal. And they have a partnership with Volvo. They have a partnership with Polestar and all that. So there's these systems out there. And I think like everyone, the standard approach is kind of figured out. Now I think it's like just validating each unit with each vehicle and all that. I think that's what's happening. And just there's no clear way to do that yet. Well, there's no easy process to do that. So it takes a while. But I agree with you. We need to standardize all of that. You don't have to buy a specific system from a specific manufacturer. And obviously, if you have a home right now, that I want to install one of those system in it. If I buy the GM system, I buy a Tesla system. Like obviously, if I sell my home, I don't want the next person to be stuck with absolutely having a Tesla, absolutely having a GM car. It just doesn't make sense. So yeah, it needs to be all standardized.
All right. Question from Dean: is there any news about the Lucid Cosmos?
No, not really. I think, you know, they're still ramping up the gravity and they're not focused on that too much. But by the end of this year, we should learn a little bit more about that.
Is there a Model 3 type car or Model Y?
Well, yeah, probably more Model Y, but...
Yeah. All right, Speculor, pretty much every EV pickup has failed so far. What do you think are the chances for the upcoming Slate, Scout, and $30,000 Ford EV pickups?
You know, I think they have failed, you know, in term if you look at the actual like sales volumes, only on the basis of prices. I think like the Silverado and all its different variants from the Sierra EV to the even the Hummer. Like if you had all of them together, they also like the sales are not awful for vehicles of that price.
Yeah,
it's not bad. It's just they are expensive, and yeah, I think if we can go down market a little bit, I think pickups are going to do just fine. Also, just I think the U.S. is obviously the biggest market for pickups, and there's still some EV adoption issues in the U.S. that's not helping. I think if you go to other markets and you actually launch these electric pickup programs there, you know, they're not doing it right now because they're very small vehicle programs. But if you go to a market that's not big on pickup trucks, that have a few of them, and then you launch that, I think it takes over those market pretty easily. But yeah, I think the Slate, Scout, and cheaper Ford pickup would be on a market of their own that it's untested yet, and I think they would do well because, like I said again, the price is the biggest disadvantage right now for electric pickup trucks.
All right, Lakers LX question. What's the impact of the used Tesla market from the earnings call and the Hardware 3 admission regarding unsupervised full self-driving? Are Hardware 3 cars about to fall off a cliff?
I haven't looked into that specifically, but, price of used EVs, including Tesla right now, are doing very well. So I think that would camouflage a lot of any direct impact on the Hardware 3 stuff. I think in reality, too, the admission that happened at the last earnings calls, I mean, if you were shocked by it, if you, didn't see it coming or something like that, like, I think you are in the very small minority that was not following this closely enough or not, open-minded as the idea that Elon was lying to us for years. So it's not a surprise. I don't think it affects the price greatly. I think also people are kind of in the holding period right now, like, because Elon said that he was going to offer more money, like a discount on you upgrading to a new car if you have an Hardware 3. Then there was the mini factory stuff, which, I can at least tell you right now, it's never going to happen in a meaningful way whatsoever, any kind of like major scale that Elon was talking about. So people are still waiting. It's like, what is going to be our actual recourse if we go direct to Tesla? Still in the camp that I think most of this is going to be resolved in courts with settlement in courts. There was, I don't know if you follow this with Apple this week that I found interesting. Like Apple got a settlement for the Apple intelligence stuff. Yeah, the AI stuff for $250 million. Now, I don't remember exactly the number of phone that's affected, but I think it's a few million. It's like between 5 or 10 million. So it's nothing. It's like, I think it's up to $95 per person, depending on like if you get the pro phone and everything. Oh, hey, doggy. Yeah. It's nothing. But this is for, it's not even a feature that Apple sold to people. It was like in their marketing, they were talking about this Apple intelligence stuff that never came to fruition through software update. Similar thing to what Tesla is talking about. The big difference is that Tesla actually sold the features to customers on top of buying the vehicle and then never delivered. So it's a much bigger deal, obviously. But it's nuts that like Apple, it's already like all set, all everything is done. Well, this thing was like happened like a year and a half ago or something.
I know, it's like it went from beginning to end so quickly.
Yeah,
I guess car's life cycle is a little bit longer than a phone, but not much. Anyway.
Yeah, depending on how you use it.
Yeah. All right. Question. Would you get an R2 in 2026 with no LiDAR? They had a lot of quality issues with the R1 refresh.
Yeah, those are kind of two questions. But I guess the main question is like, should you buy a first generation of a new vehicle program?
It's a risk.
Yeah. Normally I would tell you no. Like if it, on the, like, if you're an early adopter and everything, and you're like, don't mind having to go through, you know, a few more service visit and maybe a few recalls, then that's fine. But, you know, generally it's not, if that's not in your the cards for you, you should skip the first gen, the first few months of production, even the first year of production sometimes. Then there's the second thing going on top of this is that apparently, so Rivian R2s are getting to production right now. First deliveries customers in the next few weeks, really. Probably, I would assume there's going to be like some kind of event at the end of the month or early June, something like that. And those cars don't have LiDAR. Apparently, they're only going to have LiDAR at the end of the year, I think, or early next year. I want to say the end of the year, they're going to have a LiDAR to it. I would say yes if the automated driving features are important to you. Like, if that's important to you, go for it. But Rivian is taking a Tesla approach where you buy them. I mean, I'm sure they're going to have a bunch of active safety features that are, you know, standard. But the more convenience features are paid features. So if you don't want them, or if you're okay with just having some kind of advanced level two system, just like FSD, then you're going to probably be fine. But Rivian has been clear that they plan to move to hands-free by the end of the year. And then eyes free, I think they said by the end of the year too, they're going to have some kind of, you know, level three in certain conditions by the end of the year, or at least by next year. So if you want that, I think that is also achievable without LiDAR, honestly. But then if you want like, you know, more comprehensive feature, I'm sure they're going to focus on LiDAR for, you know, more advanced level three up to level four. I think that makes sense.
Yeah. All right. Got a series of questions here. Rivian might want to cancel the R1T because the low sales might even cancel R1S. If Rivian can build a R2L long wheelbase, so we're talking kind of like the Tesla Model YL, with third row small seats and an R2T 4.5 foot bed, which is basically like a 4.5 foot is not, you can't even put a bike in there.
Yeah.
So then F-150 two doors, 40,000 price tag, and Rivian R2T with two doors, a 7 foot bed is competitive because, all right, so we're going kind of off the rails here, but yeah. He continues, Australia diesel is $9 to $15 a gallon.
Jesus.
But that's Australian dollars, so I don't know. Like, I don't know.
It's not that much less than US, I would think.
Yeah.
Maybe that's change.
Yeah. Australia should be all EV. You have the highest penetration of rooftop solar, photovoltaic, and you can buy cheap Chinese EVs.
I think they're going fast right now. I don't know what's the new sales rate.
The downside market of Australia is everything so far apart.
Yeah. As of April 2026, it's between 16% and 17%. So not huge, but still twice the US.
Maverick is 4.5 foot but smaller interior than the R2. All right, we're all talking about these small pickups. Tesla and GM bi-directional chargers are proprietary, not standard. I think, you know, we talked a couple of weeks ago with the GM Energy guy, and he said that you know, while currently the software limits GM to only GM vehicles, they're going to be upgrading it as the specs, you know, mature. So that it'll work with all vehicles.
The charger are proprietary, but the protocols are the same. You use the CCS bidirectional charging protocol. So I think it's all going to be doable. Maybe some limitations, you know, depending on the chargers and the car, depending on the bottlenecks of each. But yeah, it's hey,
there's the dog.
Big
All right. Slate sent out an email this week saying they've got the robots installed at their new factory and they're still planning deliveries by the end of the year. So we've got that going for us.
You know, I can see it happen. It's definitely in the realm of possibilities.
All right. Any updates on NVIDIA's Alfa Romeo?
We know that the Mercedes is moving forward with using it, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of companies that are going to test it out. Like, I don't know what's going to be the adoption rate because it's not a full system, so it's a great basis for a computer vision system. So you can, if you're an automaker, you can decide, like, I can, you know, buy NVIDIA system, you know, this hardware, use Alpamayo, and, you know, kickstart FSD competitor program with that, install that on all my vehicles, gather the data, train it myself. I think it actually comes with, you know, a big data set to start with also. So you can kickstart your program with that. And, you know, we've talked about this quite a bit, but with the, you know, my experience in China, seeing the XPeng system, the Huawei system, the Xiaomi system, it's like, it's pretty clear to me that you can catch up to FSD pretty fast now. Like, they're getting to the 99% level is very doable. The bigger question is, like, who is going to be willing to go to that 99.999999 and take responsibility and go level 4, like, in the consumer vehicle market? I mean, there, like, that's going to be a lot harder. And, you know, Tesla definitely has a lead there, I would think, but it's like, how much of a lead, and just how fast can you catch up? It's more of an accelerator of that stuff, but there's also plenty of other competitor as well. So it's I don't know just how big of a difference Alpamayo makes.
All right, Carl says the challenge with EV pickups has been that the battery packs need to be big to make haulers happy, and that destroys the profit margin. You know what? One thing that's kind of come up recently is the range extenders that you know, Scout is talking about, and some others are using. I wonder if, you know, if you get a cheap range extender and you can put it on the bed or whatever, if that just eases people's range anxiety, and if you can make them cheap, you know, a couple $100 or something. I don't know. I mean, you can get a generator for $100, not $100, but a couple $100. Like, I don't know, just put one of those in the back. Anyway, it's one idea of that challenge, because with the cold and towing and all the other stuff, it's hard to make.
In China, it's becoming the standard. Like, there's this two liter motors, like very small 2 liter motors, that it's in all those EREV that they call, like the extended range EV. That is just, it's probably super cheap because it's everyone has the same motor basically. All these EV companies are adding it into their system, and it's to kill this range anxiety. And, you know, set is right, for towing, it would be like a good, you know, alternative solution.
Slate needs an update with a 4x4 option and a crew cab option later on, and with the crew cab, an option for a 3-row SUV option. But that's later updates, and they need to be ready when sales drop down. I think that sounds like a Maverick, or probably what Ford's coming out with. So I don't know if Slate needs to build that.
Yeah, they're down market. Their idea is like being cheaper than everybody else. So maybe it's good, like, product planning in the future, but if they get there, like it would be great, because that means that the first generation of the program worked, and, you know, they still have a lot of work to get there.
All right, why we don't have any GM energy charging in public parking in Canada? I don't think that's what they do. They don't do public. Yeah. All right, Equinox EV is almost sold out by me. All the cheap versions have been sold out, just 40 to 47K on lots. GM is going to have their best month yet. Mark my words, Trump, best EV salesman.
Yeah, Trump, his war machine, is the best EV salesman.
Yeah,
I'm sure that the EVs are flying off the lot right now. Everywhere is just... It's pretty clear that the kind of level of gas prices, like here it's like I think it's maintaining past $2 a liter, and you know, every time it's past 180, people start freaking out. Now it's like, you know, you're 10% over that. It's huge.
All right, did you see the discounted Tesla insurance when driving using FSD? It might be worth it to get supervised FSD 14X Lite with Hardware 3 if you can save on insurance costs.
So Tesla announced like a version of that like three different times, and I almost every time the feedback I got from the owners that do have insurance was like, "Yeah, not really. Like it doesn't add up to real discount." Apparently, this time, like the it's more like an ironclad guarantee that if you use FSD, you do get a discount. So, but it was just announced like a week or two ago. So I'm waiting to see feedback from owners after like a couple months of premiums to see what it looks like. But yeah, I mean, that's a first sign of like Tesla taking some responsibility for it. So I commend them for that. But I would still be curious to see, if you do get a crash on FSD, if Tesla, you know, now takes responsibility for it. It's like, pay, you know, Tesla insurance pays for it, or you know, they come back, you're like, hey, we have quite a bit of data on you not paying attention when there was this crash happening and everything like that. You know, something to think about.
All right, GM deserves it. Lots of good models and good prices on the EV sales. I agree. Like, good for them. And we saw the dog. Yes, Speculator, go to your Chevy dealership. And then finally, last thing, yeah, very small EREV motor can cause problems that caused the BME i3 Rex lawsuits. Yeah. What happened there?
Yeah, you don't remember that? Like, there was a few fires that, like,
was there?
You know, where people were like, hey, another EV that catches on fire. I was like, no, it's this little small generator inside the EV that's actually catching on fire. Yeah, I mean, not a bad point, but that was a long time ago. Like, we're talking a decade ago at this point. Like, it has evolved quite a bit. We're at Electrek, we're BEVs, guys. Like, we are all electric. We think, you know, that's where it's going. We're obviously, and it's such a more, you know, a cleaner, more beautiful solution to have just, you know, battery into the electric motor, into the inverter, to the electric motor. That's it. You know, it's simple. It's clean. You know, ideally, we all electric, we're all about, you know, solar or whatever clean energy solution you have, Zurek in the battery pack, you know, drive off of that. It's the best solution. However, you know, we are a global brand too, and we follow the entire world, and we see what's happening in the entire world, and then we see what's happening in the US, and we're like, there's clearly like big problems for EV adoption in the US that we don't see elsewhere in the world. And every little bit of solution you can bring, whether it is, you know, to curb range anxiety or, you know, capacity in long distance towing and all that, if these things, these range extender could be a solution to that, even if temporary solution, maybe, you know, someone gets a pickup truck with a range extender, and would Scout is, if it works out, would be a great example of that, where I definitely can see people buying a Scout with a range extender and, you know, using it for a year or two, then realizing it, you know what, I use my range extender twice in those 2 years. I've been on the 300 miles, you know, battery pack most of the time. So I'm going to upgrade my Scout and get the new Scout that's just BEV. Like, I can see that happening. And if it helps more people getting into EVs with that, I'm all for it.
Yeah, same here. And it would be nice if, you know, like, maybe don't even include a generator, but, you know, put a space and make a spec for a third party, you know, Generac or whatever, come up with a generator for
like people. A plug in the bed, you mean? Like a,
yeah, just like a, yeah, third, you know, like a DC, you know, outlet or something.
A bit like what the Cybertruck was supposed to get with the range extender. It was supposed, yeah, to be a battery pack, of course, but you know, you can do a plug that does the same thing with you know, like you said, the Generac. Yeah, that makes sense to me. All right. Well, that's it for the Electrek podcast for this week. Thank you for everyone that's listening. Thank you to our sponsor, GM Energy and the Neuro HUD. And we're going to see you same time, same place next week. Have a good and safe weekend. Bye-bye.